15587, Rule 4.
Mr. Boyd, Rule 4.
Yes, having had long conversation with our SBO, we were told that we were free to roam anywhere within the confines of the camp, but not at any time to go outside, or we would be shot. Bearing in mind that the war was by no means over, and the place was still alive with Germans, and because of the state of the war, they were extremely trigger-happy and would shoot at anything. So for our own safety, we were told to stay put. Also, I forgot to mention early on that we had achieved, we had been able to make radio sets, partly, again, from the contents of these said food parcels, because each tin was soldered together. And by special means, we were able to melt that solder and collect it and use it in the manufacture of soldering wire to in a wireless. Certain parts of the wireless we could make ourselves, but equally certain parts we couldn't, and those parts were bartered for the Germans. And they were especially interested in cigarettes, of course, particularly American cigarettes, and certain items from the contents of the food parcel. For instance, jam and Klim, which is milk spelt backwards. That was a great thing of theirs. They loved a tin of Klim, and they would sell their grandmother for it. As a result, we were able to get vowels for our wireless sets. So, yes, we had two or three wireless sets in the camp, and these we took with us on our march, and we still had them in Luckenwalde. So we were able to hear the broadcasts which were made, especially to us, from England, from the government, telling us to stay put. Whatever happens, stay put. Do not go away. Well, this we did for, I don't know, a couple of weeks or so, but when you've been in captivity, some of these poor chaps have been there 5 years. And some, incidentally, had gone round the bend, understandably. And they were in hospitals. So you suddenly find that you're released by your so-called allies, but you're kept in captivity, and you can't understand this. So one by one, and sometimes in groups, chaps took off and headed westward, and hoping to get through to our own lines, which one assumes they did. Anyway, eventually, I could stand it no longer, and I set off on my own. As it turns out, I didn't know at the time, but it turns out later, the day I did this was VE Day. And I headed west. It was an extremely hot day. I had nothing but what I stood up in. I had no money, no food, no nothing. And after I'd walked about 10 miles, I suppose, I heard this rumbling, and a sort of a jeep thing pulled up just in front of me, and a soldier jumped down, an officer. Turned out to be a woman officer, a Russian officer. It was a Russian jeep. She spoke to me in reasonable English and said, "Was I from the camp?" And I said, "Yes." So she waved her automatic in front of her and said, "Look, back, go back." So I explained my situation. She said, "You go back." So I said, "Okay, well, will you take me back in your jeep? You walk." So I had to turn tail, and I couldn't argue with this gun. So I turned tail and walked all the way back again. And I was pretty cheesed off, but there's not much you could do about it. So I don't know how long after that, 2 or 3 days after that, we were, in fact, rounded up, put in lorries, and taken to the Elbe. Can't remember the name of the place now. But the Russians would only allow a lorry load of British or Allied prisoners to go over, provided a lorry load of Russians came back this way. It was definitely an exchange, although we were allies. And eventually we made our way to Brussels. No, first of all, it was a German aircraft airfield. Again, the name of which escapes me. But while we were only there one day and one night, and certain of the chaps unearthed, they had a good search of this place, and they unearthed a whole lot of detail, paperwork, some of which were prisoner of war identification cards, one of which was mine, and I've still got. It's my German POW identification card, which we got from this particular airfield. And the next day from there, we were taken again by lorry to Brussels. We were given a certain amount of money, Belgian francs, and told we could go to town and buy whatever. But we were also given numbers. That was our departure number. And we had to be back at a certain time to get on that aircraft. And I will remember, we went into this Belgian cafe. I can't remember what my friends had, but I had a Knickerbocker Glory, which I must have dreamed about the whole time I was in there. And I suspect it nearly killed me because I wasn't used to the stuff. Anyway, that's what I had. And we then got back in time to be taken to the airfield, where we were loaded onto, in my case, a Lancaster. I got back. No. From that first airfield, we were taken to this airfield where we were going to be airlifted home in Anson's, the old Anson that I dearly loved. I did a lot of my training in, the Annie Anson. And we were taken in Anson's to this other airfield near Brussels, where we were, as I say, let loose in town, and eventually we went back, and I was loaded onto a Lancaster bomber, which had been stripped of all its guns, etc. And I don't know how many people were on that Lancaster. There must have been 2 or 3 dozen people. In the normal way, there'd be 7 in the crew. And we were sitting all down the gangways and the aisles and all over the place. And it was a comparatively bumpy trip home. We didn't go very high. One or two chaps were sick. And we finally landed at a place called Ford in Sussex, near Tangmere. And we were landed there, checked off, and we went in to have a meal. And we had a good wash and bath, etc. And we were housed there. I forget whether it was overnight or 2 nights. And then we were taken by train to a place called Cosford, near Wolverhampton. It's now a famous place because it has an indoor athletics track. And everybody must have seen Cosford on the television at some time or other. But in those days, it was an RAF station, and that's where we went. For interrogation, severe medical checks, reclothing, and of course we were able to contact our home. And we were there for a few days, I don't know how many, a few days. I will remember the interrogation. I was interrogated by a flight officer, a WAF officer. I think I was most rude to her. And at this stage, I suppose I have to apologise, but she probably didn't know, as I've just told you, that the mosquito was unarmed. Because in the interrogation, I told her how we were intercepted and shot down, and that we'd seen this. Oh, I didn't tell you this. We saw one of these aircraft go down, whether he was out of control or what happened, but one of them spiralled down to the ground. And she said, oh, you claim you shot one down. And I said, yes, ma'am, we had all cameras blazing. Which, looking back, was very rude, but that's how I felt. And then, so from Cosford, That was the end of my prisoner of war journey, because from Cosford, having been there a few days, we were sent home on indefinite leave. And in my case, it was very indefinite. So much so that my wife... I had been approached by the Air Force, would I stay in longer? Would I, instead of being, I could have come out immediately, but because I had a job to go back to, but due to the war, they weren't very busy, and they guaranteed me a job, but if I could stay in the Air Force for the time being, so be it. Well, I was a flight lieutenant, I was on good money, and I said, yes, I'd stay in. Well, you did this on a 6-monthly basis. So, my wife pleaded. Her younger brother was a wing commander at Air Ministry. She pleaded with him, please find him something to do. Please find him a posting. And he did. I was posted to this place. Posted to this place called Colnbrook. It was non-operational, it was purely a storage place, really, and it housed all the effects and documents relating to missing and deceased personnel, and it was called vaguely the Standing Committee of Adjustment, which conveyed nothing to me and probably nobody else other than officialdom. But it was where all the effects and documents of missing and deceased personnel were dealt with. And amongst other things, I came across my own file with all the correspondence in it to my wife, which was quite interesting. And that would have been early, I think, in 1945. And then in...
Early 46, probably. Early 45, you were still in Germany.
Oh, yes, 46, yes, early 46. And then I think in about the March, the whole station was moved from Colnbrook
to Hornchurch?
Yes, to Hornchurch, that's right, to Hornchurch in Essex, which was, of course, a famous fighter station during the war. And we set up all our paraphernalia there, all the storage and all the documents relating to it. And we operated our work from there. It was, when I first started it, it was a bit of a grisly thing to do, dealing with the effects of missing and deceased people, because the missing virtually eventually became deceased. So, you know, you were dealing with next of kin of chaps who you didn't know, but nonetheless they were part of your RAF. But you soon got to live with that. And it was just another job of work. And I did that until, I think it was about May 1947, when I was sent to Blackpool for demobilisation. So that was very nearly 7 years. Looking back on it, I never regret talking about it. I'm always willing to talk about it, because if you think about it, it was 7 years of probably the best 7 years of my life, meaning age-wise. And you cannot recapture those. You cannot have them again. So, yes, I'm always willing to talk about it. But normally I find that I and most other people talk about the good things. The bad things aren't mentioned, because we don't want to know about them.
Two general questions about the Second World War, if I could ask you those. It's now exactly 50 years ago that we had that general election in Britain of 45, in which Labour got all those seats. Do you remember that election?
I do.
And do you think that the forces had any influence on that vote?
I don't know. I don't know that the forces had anything to do with it.
Why do you think Labour got so many seats?
There again, I don't think I know. I'll say this. I have been a Tory voter all my life, but I voted Labour then. Now, 50 years ago, I can't at this stage tell you why. After all, Churchill had been at the helm. As far as the millions are concerned, he won the war, or he was the leader that won the war. And yet, practically the whole of the country, I don't know what the percentage was, the vast percentage of people voted for Labour. Now, I've never understood it, but I was one of those who voted Labour. And at this stage, I can't tell you why.
It must have been something to do with people's attitude of mind. Was it because you were browned off with something?
Or? Oh, well, yes, everybody was browned off. Everybody was browned off with everything. And let's face it, all right, the war was over. But my word, it was, I don't know how long, maybe 5 years after that, before rationing stopped. I mean, if you wanted a wedding, there was no such thing as wedding dresses. There was no fabric. You wanted to celebrate in some way. There was no food. You had corned beef or whatever. You had dried egg. You had this wretched whale meat, which was ghastly. So, yes, there was a lot to be browned off about. Those who were fortunate enough to come through it, as I did, had a lot to be thankful for. But you come home, to quote something that was said about the First World War, a land fit for heroes. Well, whether that saying had gone over the years and was being thought about in the minds of those coming back from the Second War, and when they found it wasn't a land fit for heroes, they rebelled. I don't know. It might have been the repercussion of this. But the fact remains that, yes, there were... Initially, of course, there were no jobs because you had to be fitted into a job. All these thousands coming back, and they all had to... The work was there to be done, but there was an interim period while you were fitted into a job. So, yes, for a period, there was a lot of unemployment. And we still had, as I say, the rationing of food and clothing. In many cases, of course, there weren't houses. All the houses had been bombed, in the big cities, that is. So, yes, there must have been a lot of unrest and discontent. So whether this was reflected, whether this was the cause of the backlash, as it were, and saying, oh, well, you're no good, we'll vote for Labour, they made promises, I really don't know. Whether that was the reason why I voted Labour, I don't know, but I've voted Tory ever since.
The other question is about the question of national unity, especially national unity across the different classes in Britain during the war. Do you think that there was national unity or national disunity in the war?
Well, no, there had to be national unity. We could never have done what we did without it. Oh, no. Everybody from top to bottom took their collar and tie off and worked in some capacity or other. Wherever you go, you're going to get the odd... well, I don't know what word to call them, but dodgers. In some cases, of course, they were engaged in... They were called spivs in the black market and that sort of thing. But basically, everybody turned to in whatever they could do. So you've got a lot of white-collar workers turning their hand to blue-collar work in many cases. And, of course, the ladies, bless them, they did firefighting. They did work on the land. And, of course, the youngsters, if they chose not to go into the war, they went down mines. So, yes, everybody did turn to, and I think it was across the board. As I say, with the odd exception, you're going to have a black sheep somewhere in every...
Did you ever come across strikes or industrial action in the Second World War?
No. No. No, bearing in mind, as you heard from my report there, that I dodged all over the country for a long while. I met a lot of people. To my knowledge, there were no strikes. I know in the First World War there was mutiny in the Navy on one occasion. I never heard of any such thing in any of the forces in the Second World War. But then, the fact that I didn't hear about it doesn't mean to say it didn't happen, but I'm not aware of it, no.